Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to Sports Beat KC, the Kansas City Star Sports Podcast. I'm Blair Kirkhoff. We're talking Royals on this episode, and it just occurred to me that the Star's been doing a sports podcast for, 7 or 8 years, and this is probably the first time we've been able to talk about the Royals and a playoff possibility in May. But that's how good they've been. Starting pitching has been superb. Salvador Perez, the captain, and Bobby Wood Jr. are playing like MVP candidates. So many good things are happening for the Royals that they've been able to mask some of the weaknesses. We talk about whether the Royals can maintain a successful path with beat writer Jalen Thompson and columnist Sam McDowell. Okay, let's get started. Jalen, it's good to see you. We haven't seen you in a while. How you been?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Doing okay. Happy to get you scheduled and get you in here and do this Royals podcast. A lot has happened since the last time we discussed the Royals. They got off to a a nice start after a couple of weeks, and we all thought that was, it was fun, the Royals. But, it'll catch up with them.
Yeah.
Hasn't caught up with them. They're playing well. We're almost at the quarter pole of the season, and they are, let's just say we're recording this on Tuesday. The Royals and the Brewers play the second of three games tonight. Seth Lugo on the mound for the Royals. So this podcast won't include that game. But they're 21-15, playing really well. And I think whenever you discuss the Royals right now, it has to begin with the starting pitching.
Yeah.
I mentioned Lugo, but just about everybody who's taken the ball has done a terrific job, just generally speaking. What's going on with the starting pitching? Why have they been so successful?
I think you have to kind of look at it, and the Royals do a good job at the promotional guide of what they have in the stadium. There's this event called Beat Bobby, where a fan runs against this LED board cutout of Bobby all the way around the warning track. And that's kind of a nice metaphor for what the Royals are at right now, because they are trying to beat what everybody's expectations are of them and what they thought they would be, and they're exceeding it right now. They're in the lead. They're in the 10th pole spot. And you said the starting rotation is a big reason for that, and that's certainly true, because if you look at what they're doing, Seth Lugo has not had a bad start yet. I believe he has 6 quality starts in his first 7 that he's pitched with the Royals, and he's going today. You also will have Brady Singer. He's pitching well, and he's really defined his role with 2 extra pitches, which was the sweeper and the four-seam fastball that he's added back in. Cole Reagans is also being who Cole Reagans is. But those are just the starters. And we can't forget about Alec Marsh, who's been great, and Michael Wacha, who is kind of struggling a little bit, but he's a veteran. He'll find it. But the bullpen is, I believe, what's really gathering them to where he's picking up these wins, because the offense is not really scoring a lot of runs right now. But the bullpen is holding a potential lead and is paving the way. You got to give a lot of credit to Chris Stratton, John Schreiber, and James MacArthur. 7-8-9, been lights out.
I think Zerp has been pretty good, too. The last few starts. Let's go back to the starters, though. Just some stats that you're very familiar with. But for our listeners, starters ERA going into tonight's game, 3.35. That's 5th in baseball. The Royals have allowed 2 or fewer runs, as they did last night in the 3-2 victory, 18 times in 36 games, and they're 16-2 in those games. That's the best record in baseball when holding teams to 2 or fewer runs. And going into tonight's game, they've allowed 119 runs. That's the 2nd fewest in baseball. That's all about the pitching and the defense. I'm going to get to that in a minute, too, but you mentioned them. Seth Lugo, the veteran, he's only been a starter for 2 years, been coming out of the pen for most of his career. Cole Reagan's the strikeout artist. Brady Singer, the veteran, the Royals veteran of the staff. He's been, you know, a Royal longer than any of these guys. 2.45 ERA. You mentioned Alec Marsh. Hey, while we're on Marsh, how about bringing us up to date on his injury situation?
If everything goes well with Alec Marsh the next couple of days, he should be coming off the injury list on Friday to make that start against the Los Angeles Angels in Anaheim. So that's what they're hoping he should be in line for. He pitched well on Sunday in his rehab start with AAA Omaha. Four scoreless innings, 6 strikeouts, looked really well. So that's the hope that Marsh will be back on Friday.
And a 2.70 ERA for Marsh. And dare we say it, does this rotation actually have a little bit of depth now after what we've seen with the Sunday start of Daniel Lynch? And Jonathan Bolin didn't pitch great in his spot start, but there's still hopes for him. I think it's pretty key that they find some depth because you're not going to go all year with 5 starters making, you know, 31, 32 starts apiece. How encouraging it was to see Daniel Lynch throw it as he did on Sunday.
It was really big because Daniel Lynch, he missed a significant portion of last season with various injuries. I believe it was his shoulder that was acting up for him. He comes back and he's pitched a lot. I mean, I think that's something that doesn't go unseen is how much he's pitched this offseason. He pitched in the Arizona Fall League. He pitched in winter ball in Dominican. He pitched in spring training. Now he's in AAA, and he's really just progressed to a point where he can be that depth piece that you need with the starting rotation because Royals manager Matt Quatrell says it all the time. You're not going to have 5 guys be your starting pitcher. You need everybody. So just to have him, you mentioned Jonathan Bolin, who also, it was his first start at the big league level. He's getting back into it again. And then also can't forget about Anthony Veneziano, who also operates in the bullpen but can be a starter and pitch multiple innings as well.
Okay. And let's touch on the bullpen again. Mm-hmm. You've already mentioned it. Stratton kind of struggled a little bit last night, 2 walks in the ninth inning, no runs, and got the save. And then MacArthur gave up the home run on Sunday against the Rangers that led to a loss. Any concerns you had about the bullpen?
I don't have too much concerns about where the bullpen is at right now. I think Chris Stratton and the walks have been an issue earlier this season. We've seen it on multiple occasions. He has to get that in order. And James MacArthur, he said himself, you know, he left a pitch up and they hit him. They hit off the foul pole. That's kind of hard to do, hitting something off the foul pole. But, I think the bullpen where they have right now with John Schreiber, which I think is the key piece, and you mentioned Angel Zerpa as well, if they continue to just be consistent and Will Smith is turning it around, he's seen what he's done the last 5 appearances that he's had in there, had a big inning last night, maybe, just maybe, there'll be enough to counteract what the offense is not doing right now.
We'll get to the offense here in a minute. Just defense, according to one metric, 30 runs saved this year. That leads Major League Baseball. And we saw how important defense was in the win on Monday night. Royals down 2-0. They come to bat in the 7th inning, and 2 errors helped them with their 3-run inning that led them to the 3-2 victory. All right, I want to turn to some position players, starting with Salvador Perez, who has had a tremendous start to this season. Our columnist Sam McDowell wrote Sunday column about Salvi. I wish Sam was here to talk about. Oh, wait a second. It's a miracle. Sam McDowell has materialized, and Sam, what did you find out about Salvi and what's going on with him, and what explains the start that he is? You know, almost triple crown like numbers, right? With batting average, home run, and RBIs.
Yeah, I mean, I think the simplest answer is he's just seen the ball really well. I mean, his barrel percentage is way up this year. I mean, as far as the frequency in which he gets the barrel of the bat on the ball. Because, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, look, his walk rate is up, but he's actually not seeing more pitches. He's seen fewer pitches. In fact, he sees the second fewest pitches in baseball per plate appearance. I think the Royals would look at his walk percentage and say, well, you know, he's working the count more. He's really not. I mean, he's just getting, I think, perhaps into a little bit better counts because of the guys hitting around him. But, you know, because the Royals are not getting a lot of production out of their 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 guys. So But, you know, I think he has shown a little bit more willingness to walk when he does get into like a 3-0 count or something like that. He doesn't seem to think that that's going to be his pitch to hit. But you're right, Blair. I mean, the top of the line thing here is that he's having like an unprecedented Salvador Perez start to a season, because as good as he's been, he's not frequently been like a get off to the best start in April kind of player. And I was more curious to see what kind of precedence there was for this and across baseball and for catchers. Like, there's none. I mean, guys, I think, let me pull this up, but guys that had hit, guys, 34-year-old catchers, Kasalvy turns 34 on, is it Saturday?
This week,
I think it is.
Yeah.
So catchers who were age 34 seasons or older who had a better than .804 OPS, on base plus slugging, there's only two of them that have ever done it. And
ever.
And none of them have ever done it. Jorge Posada did it twice. AJ Pruszynski did it once. Only Posada ever posted better than .874. Salvador Perez is like 100 points clear of that right now. And obviously he's not going to finish with these numbers, but it still speaks to the 6 weeks that he's had.
I got to think that there's something about being in a winning clubhouse and him being a big part of the, you know, of that, that just has energized him a little bit this
Absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely. I mean, we always think about Salvador Perez as the guy that brings energy, but I don't think we ever really look at what's the product of the inverse of what gives Salvador Perez energy. And, you know, J.J. Pecola told me a story last week that he got a text message from Salvador Perez that just said, "I need to talk to you." And his first thought was, "God, what is this about?" And he just called to say how pumped he was about the Royals' offseason moves and their signings. And I asked Salvy about it, too, and he said, yeah, I mean, it gave him a huge boost seeing what the Royals did, because, I mean, look, he's the one guy that has stuck through these past 9 years.
Yep.
The separation between what was and what the Royals are trying to make current again. And I think there's something to be said for the guy that was willing to do that, but I think sometimes it gets misinterpreted as someone who was okay with going through a rebuild and just losing games. And we all know Salvador Perez well enough to know, like, that is the antithesis of his personality. He's the guy that goes 0-for-4 and they win and he's got a smile on his face. And you need a leader like that in your locker room. But what's also interesting is what we saw on Friday night when he hits a 3-run home run is the Royals are going to play bigger games now than they ever played last year. Tonight's game on a Tuesday night is a bigger game than they played at all last year. And there's going to need to be some tone setters for some big at-bats, some big plate appearances that a lot of these players in this lineup that we're talking about, it's going to be their first time getting in big eighth and ninth inning moments of games that actually matter.
No doubt about it. Salvy still, he's the captain, right? Mm-hmm. He wears the C, and he's got that corner locker. Probably has an open one next to him. He takes up a lot of space there.
Two almost.
right. He's the unequivocal leader of this team. And, you see that. Jalen, you're in the locker room, in the clubhouse every day. And I keep hearing about how he's usually the last one to leave the clubhouse. What kind of impact do you think he makes just in that environment?
It's huge. You mentioned that he's the first one there, last one to leave. I mean, it's hard to basically get him pregame because he's always working with pitching staffs and, you know, with young catchers and everyone. And I'm going to tell this story because I remember last year, Carlos Hernandez was on the team, and we were trying to talk to him about one of his pitching performances. And, you know, Carlos, he needs an interpreter to speak to the media. And Sabi was like, no, English. Because, you know, that's part of the job, you know. You're in the big leagues, you got reporters, you got to learn how to, you know, speak English, you know, when you're communicating. And I thought that was just so big just to see, like, hey, I'm here to support you. Like, whatever you need, like, when you're speaking to them, I'm there to help you. And I think that's a part of his leadership that, you know, goes unnoticed, but, you know, he's helping so many of these younger guys, so many of the even some of the veterans as well. They all want to come and play alongside Salvador Perez. Talking to Hunter Renfroe, he just came over this year. He was like, yeah, seeing what Salvy has done over the years, like, why wouldn't I want to play alongside that guy because of just what he means to this city? I've said it before, and I think you guys can agree. He's the heartbeat of the Kansas City Royals. without Salvador Perez, I don't know where this team would be. Sam wrote it elegantly in his story, and he has one of the best lines where he's like, he's the central access of what they're doing now. I love that line. Y'all should read that, by the way, at the Kansas City Star. But, you know, I think Salvi's been doing well.
Yeah, yeah. And now it's kind of revived Hall of Fame talk for Salvi. Have you picked up on that any this season? Just if he continues on this track and has a couple of more years where he's, you know, having this type of production, you know, he'll be the Royals' second, you know, Hall of Famer after George Brett. Look, that's for down the road. I like talk like that, but that's really for down the road.
Yeah, I mean, Blair, that's a good point, because I mean, I think the reason that I had always thought that Salvador Perez would not be a Hall of Famer is just because you see this fall off at the exact age he is now, and he can change that case if he's able to buck the trend of catchers who are somehow productive. And one of the ways he's doing it is we've seen him play first base more. Yep. And I think our thought always was, okay, because when he plays first base, I mean, the Royals have a full-time first baseman. So Pasquantino DHs. And so the thought I think I had always had was, well, Salvi will DH, and why not leave the first baseman at first base? And this speaks to who Salvi is, that they want him in the game. They want him involved in the game because they do think it has an effect on the rest of the team.
Yeah, and to go to that point, there was a game last week or maybe 2 weeks ago where he had back tightness, and he was like, you know, right. He could have sat out that game. But no, he came up in the ninth inning, and what did he do? He gets a base hit.
He snuck. That's right. I think it was in Toronto.
Yeah.
Was it also one of the Toronto games? I think it was Toronto where Michael Massey at second base took a couple of fly balls over on the first base side, and Salvi just gave him a big smile. Mm-hmm. That was fun to see. All right, so Salvi leads the I think he still leads the American League in RBIs, right? And one of the reasons he does is because Bobby Witt Jr. gets on base ahead of him, and Bobby Witt Jr. leads the American League in runs scored. Bobby's off to a fantastic start, right? I mean, he's an amazing player. He's the guy the Royals have not had, not since I've been here, not since Brett. I mean, they just haven't had a guy who's a complete ball player like Bobby Witt Jr. He's on pace for like 140 runs scored this year, which would be a club record. Leads the American League in triples, extra base hits. He's putting together the type of season. It's like the best of his first 2 years of the majors combined. We're seeing that right now with Bobby Witt Jr. One thing I wonder about, well, he has four home runs. You know, he had the four home runs like in the first couple of weeks of the season. He doesn't have one over the fence in a month. But even with that, he is just he's at the top of his game.
Yeah, and I wouldn't worry too much about the home runs. But if you look at what he did last year, he only had, like, I believe, 14 at the All-Star break, and then he just went on a tear, and he got to 30 that way. I looked at this the other day, and I thought, because if you look at the MVP odds right now, Bobby Witt Jr.'s name is in that conversation of who he could potentially be a MVP. And if you look at someone like Jimmy Rollins, I believe it was 2007, 2008, he won the MVP that year.
With the Phillies.
He didn't hit a whole bunch of home runs, but he led the league in a whole bunch of categories. I think he had 20 triples that year. Witt has 5 right now. I'm not saying he can get the 20, but, I mean, if he can get anywhere close to that range, what he's doing, I think in the Rose notes the other day, he was on pace for, like you said, 138 runs, 81 runs batted in, and then 52 stolen bases, I believe, or something like that. But, yeah, I believe if he continues to play at the level he's playing at and the Royals take that next step, why wouldn't he be in the conversation for an American League MVP?
And the Royals have only had one. George Brett in 1980 is the only MVP the Royals have had. They've had a few Cy Young winners, but only one MVP in their club history. So I'll tell you what, it's just a lot of respect to Bobby Witt from opponents. He gets intentionally walked probably more than any Royal, doesn't he? It's been the last couple of days we've seen that happen.
Yeah, they intentionally walked Bobby Witt Jr. to get the Vinny Pasquantino.
Right. It turned out to be a good move because that's what Vinny grounded the double play, I believe, right? Okay, I want to talk about a couple other position players that I find pretty curious. First is Maikel Garcia. Mm-hmm. Had that horrendous stretch of non-production at the plate for a few weeks, but he seems to have snapped out of it. He's probably had more multi-hit games than not over the past couple weeks. Has his batting average up in the 230s, I think, when it was way, way down. The Royals kind of stayed with him, even though there was some fan talk about, you know, they need to take the pressure off of him, maybe get him out of the leadoff spot. But the Royals stayed with him, and I've seen some progress from him the last few weeks.
Yeah, I think so, too. And to the counter of that is, if you took him out of the leadoff spot, who are you going to put up?
That's right. There's no obvious candidate. Bobby Witt doesn't want to lead off.
No. I think Bobby has to solidify himself as a two-hitter. And with Mikel, it's just a matter of, you know, having the confidence, you know, to hit the ball to all fields. We know he can do that. But sometimes when you're in the heat of battle, you can start pressing a little bit. You might decide you want to pull where you to ball to the other field, you know. So it's just about staying consistent, staying up the middle with Mikel, and he'll be fine. As what the Royals hitting coaches are saying, what Matt Cottrell is saying, everyone, they like what he can do. And that's why he's in that leadoff spot, because he can spray the ball over the field.
I think there's one potential option, but he's in Omaha, which is Nick Lofton. I mean, he walks a lot. He sees a lot of pitches. His career on base in the minors is like 360. So I think the Royals are reaching a point with their lineup, particularly with their production in the outfield, where they're going to have to consider what other reinforcements they have that are not currently on their 26-man roster.
Yeah.
And is Lofton – is he the top – would he be the top candidate?
They've got a lot of guys hitting the ball really well in the minor leagues.
Including Drew Waters, right?
Yeah, Drew Waters is hitting the ball. Now, we know he had an incident. We don't know exactly what the incident was, where he was benched a couple of weeks ago at the manager's discretion. But the strikeout numbers are kind of alarming for some of the guys that actually are hitting well. Nick Prado has really high strikeout numbers still. It's more than one out of every three at-bats. Even though he's got five home runs, even though he's got a good average and good on base. They've got a player, C.J. Alexander, kind of a veteran journeyman who's hitting the ball really well in the minors. You mentioned Waters. Lofton's hit it okay since he went down there. Still hitting above 300. But, you know, the Royals have the second worst OPS among their outfielders this year. And they're close to reaching, I think, a point where they're going to have to look to see if there are solutions in Omaha. Kyle Isbell plays such a good center field, I think you can get away with it.
Yeah.
I don't think Hunter Renfro and MJ Melendez right now are playing good enough corner defense to where you feel like you can live with them hitting less than 200 in the lineup.
Yeah, with Melendez, he got off to such a good start. I thought, okay, this is the guy that we saw in Omaha a couple of years earlier. But, again, it tailed off for such a long time. He's made some solid contact recently. But he just can't seem to break through right now. How frustrating is it to see him?
He's a boomer bust type of player, and you can see it. When he's going well, he breaks out. His defense is better. And when it's not going well, it just is what it's looking like right now. And I think when you watch him swing the bat, he is swinging on one foot. And it's like you're not using your body weight, shifting your weight, driving in the ball or anything like that. So when the pitchers are just throwing it and locating it, he's missing it every single time. And I think that he has to get back locked into, hey, stay focused, stay consistent, stay grounded, and maybe his swing will come up. He has all the talent. But like you said, it's very frustrating to see him not produce. And like Sam said, if it doesn't work out, this is not the time. And J.J. Piccolo has said this earlier this year, even last year. We are not going to wait on guys to continue to hit. We got to make a decision. And it could be going that way.
I think it's a great point about his movement with his body, because MJ Melendez's swing has a lot of moving parts in comparison to a normal Major League Baseball player's swing. So usually I think when guys get to the majors, you see a lot of the advanced metrics come into play as far as this is your pitch, this is the pitch you should be swinging at. It's so much of the conversation is about swing decisions. MJ Melendez, there's a lot of conversation about the swing, and there's not a lot of that intricacy teaching at the major league level. That's not the point of the hitting coaches at the major league level, but he needs that kind of attention because there are so many moving parts with his upper half that it's why we see these wild swings from, when I say swings, I mean swings in production from him, to where he hits 41 home runs in the minor leagues and has just an awful year, to where you wonder, is this guy going to make the pros within a year of that? Right. I think with MJ, you're always going to see these just long, exaggerated streaks of production. The question is, you know, if the Royals are playing well, how long can they live with it?
you can also ask the same of Nelson Velasquez, the DH. And again, there have been moments at the end of last year after they acquired him, and then there were some couple of weeks this year where the ball was just jumping off his bat, and okay, this is the guy that, you know, he's going to solidify that DH role, but there's just not enough there. It's not been consistent enough.
It hasn't, and you know, the Royals acquired him to do one thing, that's hit home runs, and he hasn't hit home runs in, I believe, over a month now. And you know, if you're going to be a designated hitter because they don't really want to put him in the outfield on an everyday basis, you got to hit. And he just hasn't done that. And now that's kind of why you see guys like Adam Frazier in a outfield role or in the DH role. And it's kind of weird to look at it. See, because for as great as Adam Frazier is, he's not a power hitter.
Right.
That's Nelson Velasquez. And they have missed that in that lineup. If he was hitting at the same rate he was hitting at the beginning of the season, you saw the Royals roll off 7, 8, 9 run innings. They haven't done that now. And like Sam alluded to, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, nothing. And that's a problem.
Someone who has not been a problem since he's joined the Royals is the aforementioned Michael Massey. What a nice little run he is on. Mm-hmm. That home run he hit Monday against the Brewers, against the lefty, sweeper lefty, and into the wind. And I don't know what they measured that thing, but it had to go 420 or so. That was a heck, you know, heck of a piece of hitting there. He is as advertised. This guy's given the Royals another bat. So, yeah, when we talk about the outfielders and Velasquez and you know, maybe the bottom four of the order, at least Massey makes it five, right?
Yeah.
You know, when you get through Pasquantino and Perez, you get Massey in the five hole, and you at least got five productive hitters going right now.
Yeah, and the good thing about Massey, too, is when he came back, he wasn't hitting like I believe where he's hitting now. You know, he had to get his feet back adjusting and everything. So I asked him about it, and I said, what was the adjustment that you made? He said, my eyes. I had to be able to consistently see the ball better and work on, you know, just getting my timing down. And once he got his timing down, it's clicked. And you've seen a 9-game hitting streak, another home run last night. And like I said, he's playing well at second base. We know that he is going to be a good defender. The offense is going to be consistent. It's just a matter of, can he extrapolate that over a whole 162?
Okay, so four teams in the AL Central over 500. The Twins have had a 12-game winning
streak.
Just like
we all thought.
So how much of it is this division being better than we suspected, or the White Sox being so bad that teams like the Royals who have played the White Sox, and I can't remember who else in the Central has done that. The Twins have. That was part of their, I think that was 6 or 7 of their 12-game winning streak. How much of it is just that, and you know, here the Royals are competitive for the first time in a while, and looks like they might have to contend with a, you know, with a salty division. Which would be fun, right? Meaningful baseball here, but how much are the, do we know enough about the other teams to think about the Royals as a contender in this division?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these teams have taken advantage of a pretty light scheduling. I'm looking at the Guardians schedule here. I mean, 3 against the White Sox, 3 against the A's. But you know, the Royals are not actually one of those teams. I think we all looked at April and thought, you know, that as important as this start to the season was going to be for them, given how last year's April went, it was not going to be an easy April to navigate. So even though they did play the White Sox, as you mentioned, I mean, I know the Astros haven't played the type of baseball they did the previous 7 years. They're playing a Brewers team right now that's in first place. Like they played some good teams, and so I think there's more reason to believe that their record has a couple legs to stand on, as opposed to, you know, there's going to be questions about all four of these teams, especially with Bieber's injury in Cleveland. With the Twins, they do have two good pitchers, I think, that could make them a little bit more long-lasting. But the Tigers haven't been here in a while, and the Royals haven't been here in a while. So I think there's going to be questions that follow them, at least through the All-Star break, as far as their legitimacy to be a team that can be above 500 and compete for the division. I don't think we're going to see a division winner in the AL Central that what's the standing right now has them above 600 win percentage. I don't think we're going to see a team win 95 games out of the AL Central.
But we think the Royals are going to be better than their over-under. They're projected
did by about May, right?
Yes.
A couple weeks away from
somewhere in the low to mid-70s, and the baseballreference.com playoff odds has the Royals as a wild card team right now. That's pretty good stuff. So we'll circle all the way back, Jalen. Is this sustainable, do you think? Can the Royals keep this up? Can they play good enough baseball for deep into the season to sell tickets in September?
If they can continue to play like this, and one thing that is the elephant in the room, injury has not really hit the team in a way that has hit other teams, like Sam mentioned with Shane Bieber and in Cleveland and other places. If they can stay healthy, if they can play at this level, you see they can compete. I know you guys both have children. You know, it's like when your child is learning how to walk. You know, they're waddling a little bit. They're trying to get their balance. I think that's where they are right now. If you see them by the end of June, if they're in it, I believe they're going to do everything they can to try to make that push. And I think that they could be a potential contender for a wild card spot.
I think just the one thing that gives me pause is I don't know how sustainable it is the way that they've hit with guys on base compared to the way they've hit with nobody on base. Their OPS with guys on base this year is like 830, and it's second in baseball. With nobody on base, it's 600, and it's fourth worst in baseball. Usually those numbers tend to be much – the gap between those is much smaller. And so I think if you're looking for which one is going to come down to earth, I think it's more likely to be the way that they've been able to bunch. You mentioned the game last night, Jalen, that you were at. I mean, the Royals had, at one point, they had a 3-2 lead with three hits in the game. That's not a typical recipe for success. The flip side of it is their rotation, I think, is going to prevent these long losing streaks that we're used to seeing in Kansas City, because all five guys can win on any given night. And I think it's the reason you guys were talking about Daniel Lynch earlier when I was sitting here. I think it's the reason a guy like that can plug in and have a good day. The pressure is not on him to end a 4-game losing streak, to end a 5-out-of-6 skid. He comes into a team that's playing well, and I just think guys being in a different environment is going to allow them to have more success. So I think it's somewhere in between. I don't think that they're going to end up with this win percentage they have because of the bats, but I do think the rotation, having guys that can win every night and having that relief of pressure will help.
Well, at the very least, it's must-see TV.
Yeah.
Unless you have Comcast or Xfinity. And we mean that in the nicest possible way. We're not trying to – I feel bad for you guys that watch the Royals on Comcast – or don't watch the Royals on Comcast.
Or Dish or YouTube TV. Right. Or,
yeah. It's tough. All right, guys. Thanks a lot. That'll do it for this episode. Randy Mason produced the show. Thanks to him and to our SportsBeat KC staff of Monty Davis, Jeff Rosen, and Scott Chasen. Tip of the cap to Jalen Thompson and Sam McDowell for sharing their insights. Got a new product for you. It's called Edition. Get updated sports news and figures, including all of our Chiefs, Royals, college sports, and soccer coverage by going to eedition.kansascity.com. Thanks for listening. Join us again soon for another episode of SportsBeat KC, where we talk sports in and around Kansas City.